Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Friday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, Russell Westbrook has put his house on the market. Should Lakers fans finally start rejoicing? That's next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts. Always free, never behind a paywall. Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you can go to get the podcast a little bit early. Generally on non-game days, goes up a little before the audio product. Plus, you get to see us and all the fun stuff we do on the YouTube broadcast. I want to let you know as well that today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. So, Andy, you know you are a classy, rich guy when your house, the story about your house going on the market, it's in the Wall Street Journal. Yeah. Russell Westbrook. I mean, like some of us, you know, get the local paper, whatever it might be. Russell Westbrook gets the Wall Street Journal, WSJ News exclusive in the private properties section. Lakers guard Russell Westbrook asks $29.995 million. That's a little marketing trick. You don't want people to think it looks less expensive than 30. For his LA home, the NBA star bought the roughly 13,500 square foot Brentwood house for $19.75 million in only 2018. So that would be, what is that, a 50% return on that, give or take, $20 million to $30 million?
That's why Russell Westbrook is qualified to hawk for that one banking app. I mean, he's somebody that really understands how money works. Like, you should be taking Russ's advice. I'm sure that he actually used that app, like, you know, that, and the marketing slogan for this bank is like, you know, it brings back the power to the people. Like, you're in control of your own money. Look what it's doing for Russ.
Seriously. The Lakers, so this house, it is set on about a half an acre.
Look
that,
at this.
By the way, is extraordinarily pricey per foot. 13,000 square feet. It's got a 6 bedrooms, a bar, a wine room, a gym, and a movie theater. Again, $30 million on half an acre in Brentwood.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, look at this. The outside and inside of this home is, let's just be honest, effing spectacular. This is
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I will say this. For $30 million, I want it to be turnkey. I don't have to do a lot of work. And, you know, this, you know, unless your style is just completely different, that is a live-in ready house. I mean,
no, this is not a fixer-upper that, no, Russ is putting out there right now. The spokespeople for both Russ and the realtors could not be reached for comment. I don't think the realtors,
because with the only comment people are interested in here, Andy, is this realtor giving him a reference in Salt Lake City? Is he giving him a reference in Indianapolis? Because
the Shams know this realtor.
Right. The issue here is not necessarily whether it's underpriced, overpriced, or can I have a tour? It's is he being traded? Well, yeah, because under normal circumstances, a player putting his house on the market, or a player particularly, and remember when Kevin Garnett, like a bunch of years ago, bought a house in Malibu and everyone was like, oh, Kevin Garnett is going to be a Laker. He's coming.
Well, that was during the offseason when Kobe demanded a trade. And
right.
Garnett and Kobe had wanted to team up. Garnett had also requested a trade. He had wanted to go to the Lakers. And then ironically, because Kobe had created so much instability within the organization, Garnett decided the Lakers were not somewhere for him to go. That's how he ultimately ended up in Boston. You know, in the end, everything turned out very well for both parties, Kobe and Garnett. But ironically, Kobe kept Garnett from joining the Lakers.
Right, but it didn't keep him from buying a house in Malibu. And you know why? Kevin Garnett was rich. So yeah. Rich people buy houses in Malibu. The amount of people who live, who who work in the NBA, who do not play for the Lakers or Clippers, who still own houses in Los Angeles, it's a longer list than you might expect. And so, we're well past that place where real estate transactions, particularly buying a house in Los Angeles, it means much in terms of free agency or trades or whatever. But if it was anybody else, you wouldn't think about it. But, you know, obviously Westbrook is on the trade block. He has not demanded a trade. This is still my favorite thing of the summer. Russell Westbrook has reportedly not demanded a trade, but is open to one.
Beyond the fact that the Lakers are going to be looking to trade him, whether he demands the trade or not, therefore it's not unnecessary. It's also demanding a trade isn't going to be the next step that makes this thing too uncomfortable. It's already too uncomfortable. Right. So in that sense, like Russ lost that club in his bag because he made the thing so uncomfortable over the course of last season. Then his, you know, going nuclear exit interview. He really, the trade demand doesn't really up the ante in any of this. It's already incredibly awkward.
Right. And if he was begging not to be traded, they'd still have him on the block. And so, because of the what's going on, it does raise the possibility, like, does he know something perhaps that we don't? And I fully expect that he would buy. He is going to always own. The guy is from here. He's going to own a house in Los Angeles.
He bought this house before he got traded to the Lakers. And I suspect it was not the first home that he owns in LA. We have no idea if this is the only home that he owns in LA.
I would like to think it's his primary residence, if nothing else. Because if not, that is real FU money. That you just don't even bother living in your $30 million home in Los Angeles. But so, okay, does this mean anything? Should Lakers fans got real excited. Maybe thinking with their heads over their hearts when this news came out earlier in the week. But should Lakers fans be at all intrigued or encouraged by this news?
Honestly, it's a weird combination of it does mean something and means absolutely nothing because the whole thing is so fluid to begin with. Russell Westbrook may be, in some respects, prepping for a trade. You know, I don't know if his family is going or, you know, the immediate family is going to be following him wherever he goes for a year. He might be planning some type of downsizing where eventually they end up somewhere else. I mean, like, I have no idea.
Guys,
like
we're going to move from 13,500 square feet to a more modest 8,000.
I mean,
we have too much space.
Look, asking around, you know, whether you're talking about reports or talking to people in the know, different stuff, you hear that the Lakers could be, you know, in at least making progress in moving him. You could hear, no, really, he's going to start the season with the Lakers. Like, I've honestly heard a lot of both, and I don't think that we've maintained this all season. I don't think that the stuff that feels like it's being leaked by the Lakers is posturing that they're comfortable with Russell Westbrook opening the season. They're trying to regain some form of like leverage in these negotiations. There is no leverage to gain, and they're not comfortable with starting this. They may be resigned that Westbrook's going to be on the team. They may recognize that the short-term gains from the trades that are available to them are not as good as the possibilities of either waiting to move him or just going this season with him. Whatever happens, happens. And then you have more flexibility heading into next offseason to try to put a better team around LeBron and AD. That's not being comfortable with it. That's being resigned to it.
Yeah, after the break, let's talk about this because I still find this setup to be one of the most bizarre and, you know, I don't want to say unprecedented, but it doesn't seem to happen a lot. Like the context of the trade and the trade that isn't and the trade that might be in this case is so crazy to me. And I still haven't completely gotten used to it, even though we've been talking about it all summer. So we'll talk about it next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all of your sports wagering needs and for all your college and football betting needs. Sports info this season. Find all the latest football league developments, game matchup news, and podcasts. Bet Online is also your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, live betting, esports scores, the fastest, easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, golf. But Locked On Lakers familia, we have not forgotten about the NBA season coming up, the 2023 season, and the early action that you may be wanting to lay down. The Lakers currently getting 20-1 odds to win the championship, 6-point underdogs opening the season against the Golden State Warriors. Maybe ring night proves too distracting for the Warriors to focus. It's often difficult for the defending champions when they get those rings. Watch those banners go up. Head to the website today. Use your mobile device. Learn more about the trends in action. Bet Online where the game starts.
So before the end of the show, we're gonna start. This is a question I got earlier this week on Spectrum Sportsnet talking about starting lineups that we think will happen versus starting lineups that we think ought to happen. And so we're gonna try to get to that before the end of the show. Want to point out as well on. What was it, Wednesday show, Andy? Was the last time we recorded? We talked about how with the Robert Sarver thing in Phoenix, general disapproval of what that punishment is. A lot of people just think Sarver should never be allowed to participate in NBA activities again. We both pointed out that one of the things it seems like Adam Silver and the league is hoping is that kind of inertia will help push Sarver out of the league. Player opinion, public opinion, and now Najafi, excuse me, I apologize for probably mispronouncing his name, the team's second largest stakeholder in the Phoenix Suns. He has publicly called for Robert Sarver to resign in an open letter released to team employees that has gone public. He says he's not interested in buying, the majority share in the team. Just doesn't believe that Sarver should be with the organization anymore. This is the type of thing that we were talking about, that the league is hoping will push. Because, I mean, I got no love for Robert Sarver. If the league had suspended him like they did Donald Sterling, I wouldn't have batted an eye. My only point was I was very aware and surprised, sort of people were surprised that he couldn't just take the team away.
Yeah, I mean, Adam Silver's press conference, in terms of the stuff that he said, and in particular the way he phrased certain things, I don't think he handled it particularly well. And as we pointed out, it was really the first time that he ever seemed like a Roger Goodell-esque meat shield for these owners. And, there were a few quiet parts said out loud. But as we both noted, the opinions expressed by Adam Silver during this press conference didn't necessarily reflect the actual opinions of Adam Silver. He's doing the job of these owners. And it felt clear to me that if the owners ultimately had decided to create a similar type of push that eventually led to Sterling being out the door, Adam Silver was not going to be objecting on Robert Sarver's behalf.
Oh, God, no.
But, either way, the amount of time that it takes for something like this to happen is more than 48 hours. And,
particularly in the off season when there aren't games being played and there aren't teams in camps.
Right. I mean, we discussed a lot of this on Thursday's episode if people want to go back and hear our thoughts on it. But ultimately, we both felt like this story isn't done. After Adam Silver's press conference and the announcement of the punishment, like there was more to come. We had heard from LeBron. We had heard from Chris Paul. And I suspect we're going to be hearing from more people, and this is going to keep developing. So,
to your point, I always felt like David Stern, and in a different way of managing Adam Silver, felt like they were the people sort of leading the owners to where they ought to go or where this commissioner wanted them to go, as opposed to being thrown out like a meat shield. The perception being true or not. That's always been the look compared to the NFL for me. And it was weird to see it the other way. Before we get to the starting lineup thing, final thing I just wanted to mention on Westbrook that I find so fascinating about this. You talked about leverage, and I feel like most fans have kind of given up on that idea that the Lakers are, have made any kind of leverage player trying to do that, because they have none. Nobody, it seems like nobody's got leverage. like there's, you know, the Utah's got a lot of stuff that they can trade that I'm sure they want to get rid of, but most of it isn't anything that's going to provide a great return. You know, I think Bogdanovich is probably the most appealing piece that they can offer to another team. You could maybe get a protected first round pick at something like that at some point down the road for Bogdanovich as an expiring contract and a really well-established shooter. You know, but how much value does Mike Conley have around the league? Not a lot, you know, because he costs money to take off your payroll next year if you don't want him to be there. Jordan Clarkson is a nice enough player, but not going to fetch you. So it's not like they're just sitting on these golden pieces that people are fighting for.
Well,
even Indiana, who has, I think, the best individual player in Miles Turner, as far as I can tell, there's not like a booming market, at least in early mid-September, I guess now, for them. It's like this just weird waiting game where nobody has a real trump card that they can pull. And for the Lakers, it's just a matter of, I guess, what are we willing to settle for if they're willing to make a trade now?
Yeah, I mean, in the case of Indiana, I think I'm not sure they've truly decided what they want to do with this season. Mm-hmm. Like, it, you know, Herb Simon, their owner, who's, you know, I mean, I think he's like 70, 80 years old. He's been there for a long time. He's long been against anything that feels like a full-on rebuild.
They have never torn it down, ever.
Right.
He's 87.
Right. He's never done anything like that. And, you know, as the saying goes, old coots can be stubborn. So it might take beginning the season, you know, 4-17 for him to recognize, like, okay, it really isn't happening. You're actually hurting your ability to move forward if you don't move these guys now. We'll see where that goes. In the case of Utah, I think some of their players, their best value may actually come at the deadline. Mm-hmm. Like Jordan Clarkson, for example, may not feel that exciting to add to your roster now. But if all of a sudden you recognize, like, no, really, we are a scoring punch away from being a pretty damn dangerous team in the playoffs, then all of a sudden Jordan Clarkson might feel more worth a first round pick, and then figuring out what happens when he, I think, inevitably opts into, right, his player option.
Your sixth man tears an ACL in December, and you need,
right. Bogdanovich could feel more valuable. I mean, I agree with you. He's the most valuable piece that they have right now, the most valuable player, but he could start feeling more valuable to a team that could really use a shooter. As you know, 30 games into the season, they recognize, like, we're pretty good, but man,
but that's kind of my point. The incentive structure in September isn't there. And so it's because you try and trade Russell Westbrook. I mean, that's what ultimately it comes to, is that, you know, this is the bed that the Lakers have made for themselves. As we like to point out, we are 100% in Argo territory. These are the best bad ideas that anybody has. So, all right, let's talk starting lineups, because I was asked this question earlier this week on Spectrum Sportsnet, who I expect to be in the starting lineup and who I would put in the starting lineup. They are not the same question. Who should be there, who will be there? And so we'll do that next. Okay, so as I at least interpreted this, Andy, the criteria for this aren't necessarily the same. Who will be in the starting lineup and who should be in the starting lineup. Should could be defined in a lot of different ways. So let's start it this way. Right now, September 16th, give or take, I
think. Yes.
If the Lakers played a game on, you know, Tuesday of next week, who do you think would be in the starting lineup?
I think the starting lineup right now, if the roster stays the same, would be Russell Westbrook, Patrick Beverley, LeBron, AD, and assuming the shot is there, Thomas Bryant at center.
Yeah, I that was what I said too. I feel like there is a chance. It's saying, you know, if you listen to Zach Lowe, there's been some buzz around Damian Jones. Certainly, the Lakers have a, there is a track record here of starting a Damian Jones like player. JaVale McGee is the sort of archetype for somebody like. For somebody like Jones, and defensively, if you wanted to put out the best defensive lineup that you could with a horrible some issues, you know, with Westbrook in your starting lineup as a shooting guard, some protection in Pat Beverly, you want to try to protect LeBron as much as you can, create that front line that is as strong as it can be, you would put Damian Jones out there. And unless you think the shooting that you're going to get from Thomas Bryant really is going to make a huge difference in your spacing, offensively, the vertical threat of Jones might be more valuable. So I could see them actually going with Jones. I probably, where I was 75% sure earlier in the season, in the offseason, Thomas Bryant would be the starter there. It made the most sense. I actually am now probably leaning towards Jones, but I could see either guy.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can make an argument either way because, you know, the vertical threat with Damian Jones, you know, replicating that 2020 thing you were talking about, but I think also is, as much as you lose that spacing for Russ, you gain a vertical threat, which often has been very valuable for Russ. Mm-hmm. Where I think, though, Thomas Bryant, in certain respects, actually replicates what they did in 2020 more, is, yeah, you had JaVale McGee out there, but you also had more shooting. And that increased shooting with KCP and with Danny Green and with LeBron, obviously, and AD, relatively speaking, shooting pretty well, that allowed more freedom for JaVale to do the type of stuff that he does. I can see arguments either way, but again, where I predict now, it would be Russ, Beverly, LeBron, AD, Bryant.
The one thing that we are both pretty sure here is there's going to be a traditional center on the floor when they play. I know people love, you know, we spent so much time last year on the 80 at the five question. I actually want them to maximize the amount that they, this is the one of the only position groups where I really like what they've got. I like the variety and skill set. I like the, you know, the contrast there. I think these are two, not stars, but potentially underrated role players, guys who can be really good doing what they are expected to do. And, you know, Bryant was on the verge of being something pretty good in the NBA as a center before he got hurt. And if he can get back to something pretty close to that, you know, this is actually one of the positional strengths, I think, for the Lakers, particularly when you add Anthony Davis as a third center. Davis, Bryant, and Jones, I like that group. I want them to be playing a lot. And so if they have to adjust to a small ball league accordingly, fine. I want to see them try to figure out how to get their better players on the floor.
Yeah, I also feel too, like if they're not going with a traditional five, whether you remove what you think is the best use of AD, I'm just saying, like, in terms of who's on the roster now, then I question a lot of what they did in this offseason, because they clearly targeted an upgrade at center with mm-hmm. Damian Jones and with Thomas Bryant. And if you weren't going to be looking to have both those guys in the rotation, then I'm not exactly sure why they did what they did.
I question what they did this offseason. I have a feeling it could become a common theme once it begins. So the other question I got was who should. And this, I thought, was a really interesting. I thought about it for a long time, because should does a lot of work in this sense, and you can interpret it in different ways. Were I to pick the lineup that I think could be most effective for them, I would go Pat Bevitt at point. I would start Reeves at the two. I would go then LeBron, Anthony Davis, and the center of my choice. I actually would still put a center on the floor as long as that center is not DeAndre Jordan or Dwight Howard. I think it is worth doing with this lineup, because I don't love some of the options that, you know, if I'm not, I need defense. Am I starting Troy Brown? Am I putting Russ back on the floor or whatever? So I feel like their best lineup in terms of cohesion, in terms of being able to play defense, in terms of being able to move the ball, I don't want to say maximizing the shooting because that is depressing, but it puts a lot of their shooters on the floor. Also depressing. That's how it would go. Pat Bev, Reeves, LeBron, AD. We'll say Damian Jones for the beginning.
When I thought about what I think the starting lineup should be opening night, and again, I'm going to explain exactly my definition for should because there are layers to it. I still came out with Russ, Beverly, LeBron, AD, and Thomas Bryant. And there are a few reasons why, assuming he's on this team, I think Russ should be in the starting lineup opening night. There's the practical reality that Russ is still in the easily upper half, probably upper third of this talent on this team, even acknowledging the awkward fit. And if you're going to have him there, I think you actually do yourself more of a service trying in the beginning to make it work with LeBron and AD, because if you can make it work well enough, I think you actually end up with something better than the alternative. Because at the end of the day, as much as I know floor combinations matter, chemistry matters, skill sets, meshing matters, it's still a talent-driven league. And if you can find a way to make the three of them mesh, I actually think the upside there is better than thinking purely along the lines of fit. But there's also the small p politics that go along with this. And if you have a star player with a Hall of Fame resume and a presence that can become problematic when he
plus he's going to have all that stress of trying to sell his house. I mean, that is a very stressful thing.
Yeah, it's like Tom Brady at age 45. He's got a lot of bleep going on.
Guys, do not mess up the living room. We've got people coming through there tomorrow.
You know, there's a practical reality of how stuff works in the NBA. And I'm not saying that Russ needs to be catered to, no questions asked all season. He doesn't, and he shouldn't be. And Darvin Ham does not need to walk on eggshells around Russell Westbrook. He has far more job security and future with this organization than Westbrook. And at some point, if this is clearly not working, he can and should make changes that could include putting Russell Westbrook on the bench. But if you're going to do that, save one scenario that I'm about to get into next, I think you are best off being able to look Russ in the eye and say, look, man, we tried this. We gave this a go out of respect to you and your talent and everything you've done in this league. We gave this a try. It is not working. This is the thing that we need for you to do with this team. And if Russ doesn't cooperate, you let him be the unreasonable one.
Your interpretation of should is exactly what I was thinking about. It's like, you know, should means a lot of different things. And what's best for the team, you know, it's interesting.
A lot of layers to that.
There's a lot of layers.
And there's
a whole argument right now of like remote work versus hybrid work. What's more productive? What's not more productive and all that. And there's a lot of evidence that says individual productivity has gone up, you know, with remote work, hybrid work. People get their own bleep done better working. But there's aspects of the group culture, the team dynamic, the company culture that is much more collective. And we're not sure yet how those things are impact. You're talking about the second thing. Most people think about the first, like how to be individually more productive. And I don't think you're necessarily wrong. But I kind of thought you might go there, which is why I put out the other lineup.
Now there is though, the caveat though, Brian, that I mentioned the scenario, which is if Russell Westbrook can be sold before the season opens, you know, training camp on a role where he comes off the bench, still getting a lot of minutes, you know, having more opportunities in a lot of ways for Russ being Russ. You know, he can be earmarked as a closer, like maybe that's the concession. He closes more games in exchange for being more of a team player, being a soldier, kind of like what happened with Lamar Odom. He could also, Brian, Darvin Ham tries to sell him on being the third player in NBA history to win both an MVP and a sixth man of the year. Do you know who the two are?
An MVP and a sixth man of the year.
That is very obvious and fairly recent.
Fairly obvious and very recent.
Pretty recent MVP who had a sixth man of the year campaign. former teammate of Russell Westbrook. Twice. Two different teams.
Can you give me his first name?
Rhymes with Hames Jarden.
I forgot he was a sixth man at one point.
And the other one you're not going to get, Bill Walton.
You're right.
Bill Walton was a former.
Well, if I didn't get James Harden, I sure wasn't going to get Bill Walton.
So that would be the one caveat. And if you could work that out, the starting lineup I would go with in that case would be Patrick Beverley, Austin Reeves, mainly because I think Kendrick Nunn is too small to pair up with.
You can't
Patrick
play
Beverley.
Bev and
right.
Nunn at the same time.
And I think Nunn actually would be great alongside Russ as a secondary scorer off the bench. Then LeBron and AD and Thomas Bryant, because I want to give Russ the role man and Damian Jones.
Yeah, no, I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, it's funny, like Russ, in some ways, you might as well be another one of the 6'1" guards that they have because he defends like one. So, you know, that's part of the problem that they have with their continuity in the backcourt and all that, which is why trading for Mike Conley, as much as I love Mike Conley, is itself problematic. So, Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to see the show and participate in a great community that's building there. We check the thing every day. We look for comments. We look for questions. If you leave them there, you can be part of the show. As we get closer to training camp, we encourage everybody certainly to be doing that. Still trying to put together a show with our friend Travis Rogers, who is obviously the host of Locked On Rams, but obviously as well, or maybe not obviously to you, obviously to us, a big Dodgers guy, knows everything about the Dodgers up and down. So kind of want to just do a state of the Lakers compared to some of these LA teams that are really thriving in ways that the Lakers aren't. What are those teams doing from a management standpoint that the Lakers aren't? That's something we are planning. Getting close to training camp, look at some positional battles, what to expect from individual players, where the Lakers kind of may or may not succeed, which players may or may not succeed. So all of that coming up as we get closer to training camp. I hope everybody has a great weekend.